people get confused by if I am he or she. I am more than just Big Frida. I am more than just Queen Diva.
Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hello.
Welcome to London. Sunshiny, springy London.
Yes.
So much has happened this week. I don't even know where we should begin. I want to run through just a few things just in case people haven't heard. Eddie Murphy has teased us that there will be a sequel to Coming to America. Who's excited? I'm excited. Snoop Dogg is beefing with President Cheeto over satirical nonsense because he killed Ronald Klump in a video.
With a gun that went bang
at the end. And then RuPaul married his man, his partner of 23 years.
That's a long time.
That's a really long time. They look very happy and very cute. So some of the things that got people lit last week already happened really on the weekend. Let's start with the clip that had me rolling on the floor that I had to send to like 50 people. The BBC interview. Did you see that clip?
Running into the room.
So for those of you who may have missed it, a very stiff suit wearing man was prepared for his Skype interview on BBC. And he had laid the books on the bed and he had books in the backdrop and he was giving the appropriate answers on questions of Korea. And his very jolly toddler pounces in the room, is nodding and dancing. And then the next even younger child who can't walk yet, but is in one of those little buggies that lets them walk, speeds in behind the sibling on wheels. And then a very frantic woman comes into the room, gathers them up. The toddler is no longer able to walk because they get caught up under the wheels. And she drags the child out. I'm probably not supposed to laugh. I've heard a lot of comments about this. And then, like, comes back to close the door before the interview can continue. And what happens? A lot of people assume it's the nanny.
Yeah, because, you know, they don't make any sense.
The thing is, when I saw the clip, I thought for a moment maybe it's the nanny because of the frantic. Like, the, I've got to get the da-da-da-da. And, like, the lack of just coming in with some, you know, standing, walking, picking them up and taking them out. I didn't even look at her
That is exactly why I didn't think it was the nanny. I didn't think it was the nanny because she clearly had the info on he is not just in his office working. He is doing an interview.
What does that have to do with it being the nanny or not?
You don't be giving the nanny those kinds of details.
Of course you give the nanny those types of details.
Okay, I just be like, I'm working.
Okay, well.
Door closed, okay. Right? So sometimes the nanny doesn't know the importance of that specific moment because you generally are working door closed, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes the nanny wouldn't know. But because she was so clear on like, oh my goodness, this is live on air. Like as soon as she walked in the door, I could see that on her face. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that's someone who has a lot of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, and this is as important to her as it is to him. It just didn't give me nanny vibe. And then also just the casualness with which he ripped up them kids. Yeah, that's real familiar.
Upon second or third viewing, I was like, I don't know who she is. She could be the wife. She could be the nanny. I don't care. This video is hilarious.
Mm-hmm, it's a hilarious video.
But a lot of people were in their feelings that white people especially were assuming that she was the nanny. Now, I couldn't even see I wasn't seeing faces that clearly. It wasn't clear to me that we were dealing with the woman who is his wife, by the way. And it is definitely his wife, and she is Korean herself. Mm-hmm. And there's pictures of them going to vote, and, you know, they've been together for some time. And they've been on social media for some time. So, but does it say something about people's assumptions from, like, that type of clip?
Oh, sure it does. I mean, the thing is just that she's visibly Asian, and people have these stereotypes about Asian women that they're subservient, that they're in a service capacity. And he looks like this, like, straight-laced British white man. Mm-hmm. And people do not associate that a man that looks like him with someone who's in an interracial relationship. I think that was it. And then the kids were, you know, I peep it, so I could tell they were Asian as well. Mm-hmm. But for people who didn't peep it, they looked like white kids, right? So they were like, oh man, these are some white kids, and this is a white man, and this woman just doesn't belong.
And what I also saw was people talking about her parenting skills, or their parenting skills, because one of the funniest parts in my viewing the first time was when he, instead of turning around, when the interviewer says, I think one of your children just came in, and he just put the hand out, tries to push the child back, and then any toddler would go away just by you pushing them back.
Uh-huh.
Would have been maybe more useful to just turn around in that moment, but he didn't. And then that's criticized, and then of course the way the woman drags them out is criticized. But is it really like fair to criticize parents in that moment? You're on live TV. Of course, in hindsight, you could have handled it differently. Mm-hmm. But the first instant is like, oh my gosh, I'm on a Skype interview and this is happening.
Right. Yeah. I don't really think that people that are criticizing them have ever dealt with the urgency of having two small children.
Okay.
Period. I just don't. I don't see anyone that has had two small children that is criticizing them. I could see, you know, like perhaps my mother-in-law, my German Oma, being like, if you were better organized, mm-hmm. then, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you lock the door and then you do the things and da, 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 da. However, as a whole, I just can't see it being a real issue for people. Nah.
No, I was surprised myself.
Yeah.
And then Samuel L. Jackson was on Hot 97 giving a radio interview, and he was talking about, we're all in eclipse this week, by the way. Mm-hmm. Everything is under 2 minutes and how you can get shamed online by some clips. So Samuel L. Jackson was on Hot 97 giving an interview, and he was talking about Get Out and, you know, made some really flippant comments showing that he knows nothing about the history of Britain, but was like, I don't really know why a brother from Britain got this role. You know, had they been dating interracially for like 100 years now? There's only like about 8 real white folks left in the country.
Wow.
Yeah. I just wanted to be like, did you hear about Brexit, Samuel? Or have you ever left London? Anyway, so he made those comments, and a lot of people really were really upset with them. How did you feel about it? He said, you know, what is going on with all these Brits, Black Brits, taking on these roles that are very specific to the Black American experience? Mm-hmm. And for example, Naomi Harris, who was nominated for her role as the mother, Chiron's mother in Moonlight, I've seen her Q&A personally. I was there live where she said, you know, I didn't know anything about this role. I don't do drugs. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do any of these things. And, you know, I had to go and play this role. And it was really hard for me because I had a lot of judgment. And then, of course, there's 12 Years of Slave, directed by a Black Brit, the lead male who was also nominated for an Oscar, a Black Brit, and so on and so forth. So is there any validity to what he's saying?
One thing that he did bring up is that they are cheaper, which I don't know if it's true or not, but that was definitely Samuel's perception. The thing I love about Samuel L. Jackson is that he's unfiltered.
That he is.
Say what a lot of people are thinking. I think, though, that Black American actors have infiltrated all manner of roles.
Mm-hmm.
Depicting experiences out of Africa, every famous Black person from anywhere,
mm-hmm.
right, has somehow been played by Black Americans. So I think that
some of them played them well, I will say. Forrest Whitaker did some damage on Idi Amin.
Yes.
I don't know about some Nelson Mandela characterizations by Terrence Howard you know, it was a B movie.
Like, don't besmirch Nelson's name. Don't even. What he alludes to is this concept that British people, Black British people in America, are seen as not really Black sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the accent, because of the education, because of this association of kind of a class privilege in Britain, even if the British person is coming from a working class background. Mm-hmm. there's this sense of like, oh, you're not like these guys, right? You're not like our Negroes, right? Like, you're super special, right? You know, you clearly have better training. You clearly, you know, are not coming with this baggage. It's clear to me that I saw Get Out, so I'm real clear that he was he owned that role. He definitely did that, and he.
I mean, isn't that what acting is? You don't have to know the experience in order to convey the emotion.
Well, the one of the articles that we read about this was called Black Americans Do Not Own the Black Experience. And I would say that's definitely true because the Black experience is a global one. But Black Americans own the Black
experience. The Black American experience.
Right? Just to reel it back, just a little bit. 12 Years a Slave is about a uniquely American experience.
Yes.
And Get Out is about a uniquely American experience. I mean, like, so I think that there are parallels that you could give. But if Get Out was happening in Austria, let's say, where I live, then there are things about Get Out that would be very different.
Very different.
Very different. So I.
But we could get Boris to play.
Okay.
We get Boris because he's Austrian.
Oh, he's American now. Boris. I would be surprised if he has not changed his dual citizenship.
I think he has dual. I think he said he has dual because
how
his parents. Because his parents.
Come on, Boris. Jealous. Jealous.
It's his bloodline.
Oh goodness, yes. I lament every day that adults at this moment cannot have dual. If you get it as an adult, you can't have dual Austrian and American. Right. You have to choose. So all I'm saying is it's unique to America. Can we just say that? And it's not about you proving your blackness.
Right.
It's about the way that race operates in these different countries. Yes, there are parallels, but they're not exactly, they're not cookie cutter. Let's put them on top of each other. So any black person from anywhere understands that experience. Mm-hmm. As you said, acting is the ability to transcend what I understand and go into a role. I'm just glad that they picked a black person to do it.
Wait, come on now. It's Jordan Peele. Of course he gonna pick a...
I'm really happy about that.
Right.
But it feels different a lot of times when these stories about a unique experience from one country is coming from someone from someplace else.
Well, I was surprised when David Oyelowo was picked to play Martin Luther King Jr. in Selma. But, you know, he's been working with Ava for a long time. I imagine that's how that came about.
Mm-hmm.
After watching the film, I have to say, you know, everything about his characterization, from the cadence even of the way he spoke to his movements, I was like, he's obviously really studied the man, and he didn't get nominated for an award. Let's just put that out there because I'm still saucy about it. But I feel like what people are missing in this conversation, rather than, as so many Brits have brought up to me, well, Americans are always doing this thing and they're never playing it with good accents. And I'm like, well, you know what? A lot of Brits come over and try to imitate American accents. And you guys think that there's one standard accent that works across the board. It is not. So let's not play this very low game of accents and whatnot. Those are hard to get. But it's a structural issue. If there were more roles in general for black people, we wouldn't be arguing about where the black people came from to play them. But as we know, there aren't a lot of roles for black people from in Hollywood, at least. So you have this tiny market with a growing supply, and then people are looking really harshly. Who's getting those roles? Why are they getting them? Why am I not getting them? I think even 30 years ago, it looked differently because these actors weren't on this level yet.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it's interesting that this critique comes from Samuel L. Jackson, who definitely for 2015 was the highest grossing actor. So this isn't someone who makes chump change. This isn't someone who, you know, and he had X-Men. Yeah, Avenger. I mean, he's everywhere,
yes.
Right? Like, he's in these franchises, and then he gets these one-off roles that are massive. So it's not like his agent's phone ever stops ringing.
Right.
He's busy.
If you want to read more about there was a great article on that. Samuel L. Jackson is a great read that explains, you know, he has this framework contract with studio. He knows he's going to get booked in for so and so many films. That is why some of those films are not so good. And everybody likes him because they say he comes in, he's professional, he knows his lines, and he's ready to work. He's not a diva. Mm-hmm. Just comes in and does the work because that's what acting is. It's the job. That's how he sees it.
I'm tired of these goddamn snakes on this goddamn plane. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just itching to do that. That's my Samuel. My inner Samuel coming out.
In our second segment, we're going to tap dance barefoot on some glass.
Mm-hmm. You got me over here singing Negro spirituals. I am singing Negro spirituals, so go on.
Look, we're not going to be able to talk about all the nuances today because of who we are as human people.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we can't talk alone about all the nuances. I want to talk about the discussion more than I want to talk about experience because, you know, I'm a faux academic. That's what I like to do. Over the weekend, a clip, yet again, another clip.
Okay.
Less than 2 minutes.
Okay.
They be cutting these things. A clip circulated quickly from Channel 4 interviewing Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. And for whatever reason, she was asked to comment on some things. And because she is a champion of feminism and she has a book coming out called How to Raise a Feminist, I believe it's called. She gets asked a lot about feminism. She gave a TED talk about books and feminism and whatever, whatever. So for whatever reason, I don't know, I have not seen the entire interview, but I have seen the clip from Channel 4 News where she says, quote, "So when people talk about are trans women women, my feeling is trans women are trans women. If you've lived in the world as a man with the privileges the world accords to men, and then sort of switch gender, it's difficult for me to accept that then we can equate your experience with the experience of a woman who has lived from the beginning in the world as a woman and who has not been accorded those privileges that men are. I don't think it's a good thing to conflate everything into one. I don't think it's a good thing to talk about women's issues being exactly the same as the issues of trans women." End quote. Now, there's a lot of problems with just that statement. And that's not, you know, that's obviously not even the entire statement. But she did try to go back on one important area. Obviously, the backlash was swift and furious and large. And she wrote a very long post on Facebook trying to clarify some of the things that she said that come up in that clip. And I'm not going to read the entire clarifying statement because it's too long.
She is a writer.
She is a writer. And she's better at writing than at speaking, in my opinion. But I would like to read a few things. In this particular instance, quote, "Perhaps I should have said trans women are trans women and cis women are cis women and all are women, except that cis is not an organic part of my vocabulary and would probably not be understood by a majority of people, because saying trans and cis acknowledges that there is a distinction between women born female and women who transition without elevating one or the other, which was my point," end quote. So the different critiques range from, she said trans women aren't women, she denied trans women their womanhood, to she's speaking for trans women. Other people also said things like, this is a transphobic statement, and this is, she's not recognizing her cis privilege. Not every trans woman, or trans women, not even not every. A lot of people simply wrote, trans women don't experience male privilege, and so on and so forth. What I would like to talk about is, I'm not discussing necessarily the content. Trans women are women, full stop. But my problem is with the way this discussion has been had. Why is the first thing to silence her? And that came from Black trans women, that came from white trans women, that came from everyone in between. Why is that the first reaction in the queer community? If someone has misspoke or has misunderstood something, and that person has receipts on the work that they've put in, mm-hmm, to LGBTQ rights, why is the first reaction to silence them?
How do you feel she's been silenced?
Don't speak for us.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing that people said. And I don't know that that's what she was doing. I think she was trying. We don't know the question she was asked. And this is always the problem with journalism. People get asked a question off mic, and then what we see is their answer. So
it seems from the interview that she was asked the question, are trans women women?
Okay, maybe that was the case.
That was recorded.
Then I feel like she's being silenced because there are very loud people saying that she should be stripped of her platforms, she should lose her book deals, and so forth. And it's like, really, because were all of y'all loud when all of the women that we have talked about on this show said worse things? Were you asking for Lena Dunham's platform to be stripped, for Amy Schumer's platform to be stripped? I mean, it just seems really odd to me that that would be the first thing that we want to see happen to her. Why can't we have a constructive conversation? Why does it have to go to her livelihood?
Yeah, I think that there isn't really a distinction between hate speech and speech I don't agree with. The thing about what she said is that the reason why it's such a minefield and people are so reluctant to talk about it is because if you get called a TERF, which is a trans-exclusionary radical feminist, if you get called that, then that is licensed in a lot of circles in the queer community to be treated just reprehensibly. I can't even explain it. And at the end of the day, it means that within the queer community, there is a misogyny that is happening, a treatment of women and a silencing of women and their ideas that is happening that seems to be issue-based, but is actually very familiar in the way that women have been dealt with forever. And that's what we're seeing crop up with CNA. So she misspoke, but at the end of the day, it's so clear that she wants to be an ally. She's putting in work and she wants to be an ally. It doesn't mean that she'll always get it right. It doesn't mean that she knows all she needs to know about it, but you're not dealing with a Milo person here or someone who is a Mike Pence or someone who's just out to get you. You're dealing with someone who wants to get the issue right, who wants to forward the goals of women and wants to forward trans-inclusive feminist values. And
like, in Nigeria specifically, not just in the States, in Nigeria.
That's another piece of it I wanted to touch on. There's this exporting of American terminology and academic values within the queer community that does not always make sense, especially for women in the global South. So for women in the global South, the realities of gender are different. Mm-hmm. They're just different. And they're not even different in the same way throughout the global South.
Right.
So I think this idea that somehow, you know, we've thought up these terms and we've thought up this way of talking about it, and this is how we're going to talk about it. And then you have someone who is not American, who's coming from a culture with their own very rich expression of...
But is based in America.
But is based in America now. But she is still coming from a place.
Of course.
And then she comes to this place and the way she talks about it is, of course, going to be different. It's going to look different. I'm really disappointed with the way that a lot of people have spoken about her. One very prominent trans woman on Twitter that responded first and very eloquently about it. One of the things that she said was, "I'm not interested in disposing of Chimamanda," which I thought was great. But I think that the vitriol in which people come out against her is very much this kind of, it has inherent in it this idea that this person can now be thrown away because they have not gotten this 100% correct. Another thing is that I think people are very sensitive to the implications here.
Right.
People are sensitive to the implication that trans women are not women, and understandably so. But she didn't say that. You know, she did not, you know, if I say cis women are cis women, it does not say cis women are not women, right? So she said trans women are trans women doesn't mean, you know, if you look at the statement in its literal form, it doesn't mean trans women are not women. I understand how people are sensitive to that. And so by not answering the question plainly, are trans women women? Yes, right? Just start there,
right?
And then go into my feeling is and all this other nuance or maybe not. I don't know. By not answering that question plainly, she opened up a can of worms and it was like, but where's the yes? But where's the yes? But where's the yes? And so people are very sensitive about that.
And the thing is, especially because so much of these conversations start from very highly educated people. Something happens when it comes to language. For example, people of color. It is a term that is used today and often conflated because the term was coined by Black feminists, some of whom were also queer women. It was a self-imposed term. And now today, we recognize recognize 40 years later that the term is great, but it doesn't actually reflect what it needs to. So we like to differentiate between Black people and people of color because of anti-Blackness or anti-Black racism in people of color communities, right? But that's the evolution of language, so that tomorrow trans and cis might not even be the thing. I mean, cis isn't something we've been saying that long in the mainstream.
It's also really interesting, the term cis. Now, I have to say, I don't identify as a trans woman, but the term cis is not something that I feel comfortable with at all. I don't feel comfortable with that term. It feels to me like the term African-American. I feel like I woke up one day and I was like, oh, I'm African-American today?
No, I've always rejected that term.
I don't like that term. And I'm still Black, y'all. Sometimes I'm a Negro. But, you know, the term cis doesn't sit well with me for a lot of reasons.
Right.
But for me to be honest about that seems problematic to people who really need that term as a point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really troubling to me that in this movement around gender, where there's a priority being placed on us identifying ourselves, if I say I don't want to identify as a cis woman, mm-hmm. that then becomes a problem.
Right. Because of your cis privilege.
Of my cis privilege, right? I think that one thing, I was reading this article by Bell Hooks, Understanding Patriarchy, and she talks about the difference between her upbringing and her little brother. Upbringing. I think he's about a year in difference of age from her. And she talks about the difference in how they were experiencing their gendered roles and how they were taught to perform in their gendered roles. And she names it patriarchy instead of male privilege per se, because this was really very traumatic for her brother as well.
Right.
He's being forced into boxes and molded in a way that he's not comfortable, that doesn't fit with his inherent personality, and sometimes in violent form being forced to sort of perform maleness in this way. When we talk about privilege, it doesn't necessarily mean that people on the top of that hierarchy win right. with that privilege. When we talk about any hierarchy, it's not necessarily a win for the people that are on the top of the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
We're put into a system that doesn't necessarily understand anyone's true identity.
Right.
It just understands where you're supposed to be placed and how you're supposed to perform depending on where you're placed. So that happens with cis women, that happens with trans women, that happens with men, cis men, trans men as well. So it happens. It just right. happens.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because Laverne Cox tweeted quite a bit about this and said she spoke with her twin brother and they discussed if growing up in Mobile, Alabama, if Laverne could really have been considered to experience male privilege. And basically her summation was no, because she was a femboy and that wasn't accepted. So Chimamanda said about this, not addressing Laverne directly, but, and some of the language is wrong, so please be aware of that. Quote, a trans woman is a person born male and a person who before transitioning was treated as male by the world, which means that they experience the privileges that the world accords men. This does not dismiss the pain of gender confusion or the difficult complexities of how they felt living in bodies not their own. Because the truth about societal privilege is that it isn't about how you feel. Anti-racist white people still benefit from race privilege in the United States. It is about how the world treats you and the subtle and not so subtle things that you internalize and absorb. This is not to say that trans women did not undergo difficulties as boys, but they did not undergo those particular difficulties specific to being born female. And this matters because those experiences shape how adult women born female interact with the world. End quote. Now, like I said, there's a lot of problems with the language there, but I think one thing to touch on is just the conflation of personal experience and actual societal privilege, as she calls it. And this is something that, you know, Black people talk about all the time when it comes to race. And I think that there definitely are some parallels when it comes to gender for a number of reasons. But I, at the end of the day, what strikes me as important in this whole conversation is something that Angela Davis said at the WOW Festival on Saturday. She said the problem in having, and she wasn't talking about this statement, she was talking about something very different. But she said the problem is always setting what is the majority or what is the oppressive structure as the get-to point. And I'm paraphrasing. But she said, why as a woman would I say that the man is the standard? Why as a black person would I say what the white person does is the standard? I don't want anything to do with that. I want to create my own world. I want to create my own identity. And I think what happens in the queer community, especially like we saw with the marriage equality discussion, for a lot of people, in my personal opinion, white gay males, that was the last step. Now we can marry. Now we have every right that a heteronormative couple has. So now we're full humans. And that is missing 90% of the struggle of most queer people, at least in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And especially queer people of color. So I ask myself if these conversations happen because a particular form of gender is being centered rather than saying that over there is fine, but that's not my womanhood. My personal womanhood has nothing to do with the white woman's womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
The idealized show that I've been fed my entire life. That has nothing to do with how I live my womanhood. And I get denied. I moved to Germany, a place that was not ready for me, and got told all the time that I wasn't a woman because I wasn't doing certain things. I wasn't signaling in the way that they wanted me to signal. Every trope of the black woman denies her womanhood.
So I think around trans issues, what's really painful, and I'll state again as a public service announcement, that I'm not trans and I don't want to speak for trans people. But what has been told to me is very painful. It has been very painful, is that under the guise of acknowledging diversity and difference within gender expressions or within different types of experiences, this singles out trans people in a way that identifies them as outsiders, right? Others them. And I think that's the fear here, is that we really haven't found a way to signal difference without signaling hierarchy. We haven't found a way to signal difference without othering folks. We haven't found a way to acknowledge this diversity while holding all things to be of equal worth. And of course, if you have a lot of experience with that, that's very scary. If I'm in all white space and someone starts bringing up the fact that I am black, I get very uncomfortable, not because I'm at all uncomfortable with my blackness. It's like, but why are you bringing this up right now? Like, what are y'all about to do? Like, right. What's about to go down that I'm not going to be fully comfortable with? Because that's usually the context within right. which, you know, these people are now signaling me out. I get the apprehension and the anxiety and the fear caused by CNA's remarks. I wonder if we'll ever get to a place where we can have a nuanced discussion about this.
We have to. If we want to move forward in our progressiveness, in our faux progressiveness, mm-hmm. in our self-proclaimed progressiveness, then we have to be able to talk about all things. And we have to be able to listen to each other without imposing those things that we experience in the world. This is something we talk about all the time. Coming into a space that we've created for ourselves, for example, we create a space where only black queer people come together, or only right. black and brown queer people come together. Uh-huh. And then we start barking at each other immediately.
Right.
Because we think we're hearing what white people have been telling us the whole time.
Oh, we've seen that.
Yes, we have.
The thing too around the issue of womanhood and transness, cisness, is that is it something that cis women are really allowed to discuss right now? It's something mm-hmm. that I think about a lot. I, you know, was in a group of queer women and the trans issue came up, and there was definitely the silencing of cis women. So it was just really problematic, because if we're going to work together, like, we all have to be able to talk.
Right.
It can't just be like one of us is talking. That's not a discussion. And so how do cis women discuss this issue without cisplaining, right. so to speak, right? Cisplaining trans issues to either trans people or each other or the world at large.
And without being assumed transphobic.
Exactly. And without being assumed transphobic because they're talking about trans issues. I think that there's such a narrow path right now, right? There's a narrow path of what you can say about transness, and that makes it really a scary topic to discuss. And that doesn't shift anybody's views about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if cis women get the sense that we just can't talk about this, we can't talk about this without being thrown off the island, so to speak, of feminism, then they're just not going to talk about it. But that doesn't mean that views are going to change.
Right. We have reached out to a few women who identify as trans women, and we hope to be able to continue the conversation with them in a different episode. And to end, what are we excited about? What's making us happy? What are we looking forward to? Let's go. Let me hear it.
Oh, why you start with me?
Really? I always start with you. Really?
Okay, so I'll tell you what I was excited about. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Some things I'll say about. So I'm here in London right now. I absolutely love it. I'm excited about this Black Sci-Fi thing that's happening tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And then next week.
So Black Sci-Fi means there is a series happening. A 12-part series, and tonight it's about Black women in science fiction, Octavia Butler.
Gotta have it. But I'm really excited. I'm gonna come late, y'all. I'm coming late, but okay. I'll be there. So so there's that. Mm-hmm. And then I head off to New York next week, and I am so excited about Climbing Poetry. Is having their album release party. So for those of you who don't know Climbing Poetry, it's an activist, queer, amazing group of women that do poetry, bilingually, Spanish, English. They've done a lot of extensive work with Haiti. And at the core of their poetry is somewhat of a liberation message. And so I've been knowing them for so long. Oh my goodness, I'm gonna date myself over 10 years. And they've just been so steadfast in doing this work. And so I'm so happy to be able to connect with them again in New York. Now, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to finally getting to watch Get Out.
Do it.
It's out. Today.
We're watching it together.
Are we? Because you've already watched it.
Okay, so. But I need to watch it a good 20 more times.
I'm not really sure if that's conducive.
What do you mean?
Because you've already watched it.
I'm not going to spoil it, though. It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
I was going to take you to see Logan. On Sunday.
Oh, we can see Logan. We can see Get Out. Feature is going to be great. And let me make the popcorn. You got nutritional yeast? What you going to do?
Okay, no. And other than that, I'm really excited about some of my friends who are performing or have already performed at South by Southwest. They received really great reviews after only singing two songs.
Do it.
And Erykah Badu took over their phones and did all the selfies. So it looks like they had a good time. I'm always excited about South by Southwest because I've discovered so much new music that you will hear about on the show. So yeah, I'm excited for other people and I'm excited for movies.
Yes.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And have a look at our Patreon site, patreon.com/thequeertruth, and drop us a small donation. Until next time, peace out.